This is from Matthew chapter 27. Early in the morning, all the chief priests and the elders of the people made their plans how to have Jesus executed. So they bound him, led him away, and handed him over to Pilate, the governor. And the governor asked him, "Are you the king of the Jews?" "You have said so," Jesus replied. When he was accused by the chief priests and the elders, he gave no answer. Then Pilate asked him, "Don't you hear the testimony they are bringing against you?" But Jesus made no reply, not even a single charge, to the great amazement of the governor. Now it was the governor's custom at the festival to release a prisoner chosen by the crowd. At that time they had a well-known prisoner whose name was Jesus Barabbas. So when the crowd had gathered, Pilate asked them, "Which one do you want me to release to you, Jesus Barabbas or Jesus who is called the Messiah?" For he knew it was out of self-interest that they had handed Jesus over to him. While Pilate was sitting on the judge's seat, his wife sent him this message: "Don't have anything to do with that innocent man, for I have suffered a great deal today in a dream because of him." But the chief priests and the elders persuaded the crowd to ask for Barabbas and to have Jesus executed. "Which of the two do you want me to release to you?" asked the governor. "Barabbas," they answered. "What shall I do then with Jesus who is called the Messiah?" Pilate asked. They all answered, "Crucify him." "Why? What crime has he committed?" asked Pilate. But they shouted all the louder, "Crucify him." When Pilate saw that he was getting nowhere, but that instead an uproar was starting, he took water and washed his hands in front of the crowd. "I am innocent of this man's blood," he said. "It is your responsibility." All the people answered, "His blood is on us and our children." Then he released Barabbas to them, but he had Jesus flogged and handed him over to be crucified. Then the governor's soldiers took Jesus into the praetorium and gathered the whole company of soldiers around him. They stripped him and put a scarlet robe on him and then twisted together a crown of thorns and set it on his head. They put a staff in his right hand. Then they knelt in front of him and mocked him. "Hail, King of the Jews," they said. They spit on him and took the staff and struck him on the head again and again. After they had mocked him, they took off the robe and put his own clothes on him. Then they led him away to crucify him. As they were going out, they met a man from Cyrene named Simon, and they forced him to carry the cross. They came to a place called Golgotha, which means the place of the skull. There they offered Jesus wine to drink mixed with gall, but after tasting it, he refused to drink it. When they had crucified him, they divided up his clothes by casting lots. And sitting down, they kept watch over him there. Above his head, they placed the written charge against him: "This is Jesus, the King of the Jews." Two rebels were crucified with him, one on his right and one on his left. Those who passed by hurled insults at him, shaking their heads and saying, "You who are going to destroy the temple and build it in 3 days, save yourself. Come down from the cross if you are the Son of God." In the same way, the chief priests, the teachers of the law, and the elders mocked him. "He saved others," they said, "but he can't save himself. He's the King of Israel. Let him come down now from the cross and we will believe in him. He trusts in God. Let God rescue him now if he wants him, for he said, 'I am the Son of God.'" In the same way, the rebels who were crucified with him also heaped insults on him. From noon until 3 PM, darkness came over all the land. About 3 PM, Jesus cried out in a loud voice, "Eli, Eli, lema sabachthani," which means, my God, why have you forsaken me?" When some of those standing there heard this, they said, "He's calling Elijah." Immediately one of them ran and got a sponge. He filled it with wine vinegar, put it on a staff, and offered it to Jesus to drink. The rest said, "Now leave him alone. Let's see if Elijah comes to save him." And when Jesus had cried out again in a loud voice, he gave up his spirit. At that moment, the curtain of the temple was torn in two from top to bottom. The earth shook, the rocks split, and the tombs broke open. The bodies of many holy people who had died were raised to life. They came out of the tombs after Jesus' resurrection and went into the holy city and appeared to many people. When the centurion and those with him who were guarding Jesus saw the earthquake and all that had happened, they were terrified and exclaimed, "Surely he was the Son of God." This is the word of the Lord. Thanks.
Well, in these uncertain times, as they've been declared by our Prime Minister, so uncertain times of so many unknowns and all kinds of fear about, you know, what's going on with Trump and Iran and Israel and Middle East and fuel costs and cost of living and all kinds of things. And that's before we even think of all our personal struggles that we've got going on as well, personal relational health struggles. Isn't it refreshing to be able to come to church at Easter and for just a moment to pause and to hear the old, old story that's full of certainty and full of clarity and full of hope? To be reminded that through the cross of Christ, God was at work demonstrating his unfailing love to the world, acting to save sinners, beginning a new era marked by the grace of Jesus, who purchased with his blood life and eternal life for all who trust him. That's the good news of Good Friday. That's why we call it good, and it's as simple and as wonderful and as helpful as all that. And yet amidst all that enormous certainty, comfort and hope that we draw from this account, did you notice those who were in the account, did you notice how it ended for the soldiers on that first Good Friday? Certainly, you know, the passage continues. We take up our Bibles and we'll see the detail leading to the burial and the resurrection on Easter Day that we'll return to and look at on Sunday together. But back there at the cross, as that Good Friday came to its conclusion, did you notice that there wasn't any certainty or comfort or hope for those soldiers? What did they say? There in that sentence, labeled number 54, when the centurion and those with him who were guarding Jesus saw the earthquake and all that had happened, they were terrified and exclaimed, "Surely he was the Son of God." But they were terrified as they said this. Terrified. That which is good news to us is a terrifying realization to them. And that's kind of strange, isn't it? I mean, think on it. These guys were soldiers overseeing an execution, something they do all the time, and they've just been successful with the death of Jesus. For them, this is a KPI success moment. This is every reason to be smiling. You're in charge of a crucifixion, make sure he dies. Job done, tick. So why the terror? And why only at Jesus? Because there was three men they crucified there on that day. And none of them had been a terrifying threat before this moment. And especially not the guy in the middle with that written charge above him that they'd nailed up there, declaring his crime, "This is Jesus, the King of the Jews." So why the terror? Especially because these soldiers knew all about him before this moment. They'd already had, as we heard in the reading, they'd already had a really good go of humiliating him personally, humiliating this Jewish king. They'd been very busy. As we heard in the reading, he was already bleeding, a bleeding, bashed up mess before he got to the cross from their treatment. And these guys are likely from that same company of soldiers, because the whole company of soldiers were brought together, who had earlier stripped Jesus naked, mocked him with that crown of thorns and the purple robe and the staff and fake worship. They spit on him and they struck him on the head with that staff again and again, and he'd done nothing to resist. No, there's nothing to fear from this crucified man, and especially because they've also just witnessed his own people rejecting his kingship over him. No trouble from the others who were going to come and save him, no way. And now he's no longer breathing. There's nothing at all to be terrified about, nothing at all, unless they suddenly realize that this dead Jew is more than he seemed. Much, much more. I wonder, do you ever have moments like these guys had? You know, moments where a sudden realization leads to terrifying regret? You know, maybe it happens for you, perhaps, when you're on the roads, maybe in traffic. You know, maybe sometimes when you say something dumb to your boss or maybe to someone that you love, and in that realization moment of sheer terror, you're hoping maybe it'll be okay. Maybe it won't matter. Maybe they didn't notice. Maybe it'll all just go away. Maybe I'll get away with it. Yeah, I have those moments too. In fact, I try to minimize how many of these I have, but I've had two in the past 2 weeks. I try and do that only that many in a year. It's been quite a moment. Now, the first was when I accidentally chopped clean through a live power cord with my hedge trimmer. Yeah, not my greatest moment in the garden. Not my greatest and almost my last. If not for circuit breakers, it would have been my last moment in that garden. And the second, when I was that guy at a wedding a week ago who, using this shoe, accidentally trod on the bride's dress as she's walking down the aisle. Good on you, Uncle Mike. If not for my wife's quick thinking, well, what a disaster that could have been. Now, looking back on those two moments in reflection, I'm not sure which was the most terrifying to contemplate. Death by electrical shock or death by bridal party. Neither is a nice way to go. Meanwhile, for these soldiers there at the cross, well, they've got no circuit breaker to save them. They've got no dear wife standing by to pull them off at the last second. No, indeed, their terrifying trouble, it's only just beginning because they've only just worked out who Jesus really is. That he's not. So they've worked out who he is and who he isn't. See, they've worked out that he's not just some sad victim of a plot by wicked men. That he's not just one who was let down by a weak-willed governor who should have known better. Not just made a scapegoat so a criminal could go free. Not just did he become sport for a bloodthirsty people and a target for insults from passers-by and religious officials and those crucified alongside him. All those things happened. Absolutely, they did. But they've worked out it's not just that. That's just on the surface. No, these soldiers were witnesses and participants to all those things. They saw all that, but then something else was revealed to them in those final 3 hours. Something else was revealed to them that they had front row seats to. We were told they were sitting, they were watching over him, and they had front row seats to a series of apocalyptic fireworks, to a set of cosmic events that cast the identity and death of Jesus in an entirely different light from what they had presumed until this moment. Now, we need to remember that these soldiers are the ones who likely heard that about that suffering dream of Pilate's wife, and they definitely heard the religious officials scornfully announce what Jesus had claimed about himself. We heard about it in the reading. Check it out there, that sentence numbered number 43. They said, well, he trusts in God. Let God rescue him now if he wants him, for he said, I am the Son of God. That's what he'd said. And with that dream in the background and with those Son of God words in the foreground ringing in their ears, the apocalyptic fireworks from God begin from noon until 3 PM, as darkness comes over the land. And isn't it the gods, only the gods who can control the sun? And then at the very end of those 3 hours, as they finished, Jesus spoke for the first time. And in a very loud voice, he cries out to that God, saying, my God, why have you forsaken me? And someone watching claimed that he was, you know, he's probably calling Elijah, that famous Jewish prophet who called down fire from heaven and consumed his enemies on a number of occasions. And Elijah, who raised people from the dead and condemned other people to death, and who himself had been saved by a fiery chariot coming from heaven. Now, cosmic things are afoot, all right. Let's stand back and watch, people. Let's stand back and watch. But he wasn't saved. It's all set up, but he wasn't saved. And all of a sudden, instead, Jesus cried out and he simply gave up his spirit. And if that wasn't strange enough, at that moment, they hear that the curtain of the temple that protected unholy people from a holy God has been ripped in two from the top to the bottom, and the earth around them is now shaking, and the rocks split apart, and tombs broke open and bodies of holy people who died and raised. And if that's as they're witnessing, if that's how God responds as his son dies, what could it mean for those who were responsible for his death? Oh, these guys are soldiers. They know how this works. Oh, they know how this works, all right. That a son not saved by his father is a son who will be avenged by his father. That's why they're terrified. And rightly so. I mean, what else could you be when you realize that you've got the blood of the actual Son of God on your hands? And where can you run to escape that kind of guilt? Where can you go when his father has power over the sun? He can make the earth quake at will, split rocks, open temples, rip down untouchable temple veils, bring people back to life. Where can you go when that's who you've offended? No, there's nowhere they can run. And they know there is no excuse for their guilt. And so they're terrified. And they're right to be so. But then nothing happens. It's kind of like they get away with it, isn't it? Sure, there's nowhere to go. But why did nothing happen? Well, nothing happens if there's a bigger story at play. They're in all kinds of trouble unless there's a bigger story at play, a bigger story that God is writing through these cosmic events. For what if Jesus was meant to die on that cross? What if Jesus went to that cross knowingly and willingly to take on himself God's wrath for the sins of even those who killed him? What if God meets their terror with his mercy? What if in his son God provided the one who can take away their guilt, pay their debt, and who can set them free to live again? Now, they don't know it yet, because that good news is not going to be told until after Jesus rises from the dead on that third day. But that resurrection reason is the reason why their terror could later be turned into joy. Their terror could later be turned into comfort and peace, as with clarity, certainty, and hope, they will later hear that on a cosmic scale, that day in Jerusalem, God himself supplied a safe place to stand. He supplied a safe passage, a safe refuge from his vengeance for everyone who trusts in his son, for he is God's son. Because here's the good news. God didn't display his power at the cross to scare us so that we would run away. No, he did it to catch our attention, to grab our attention and draw us into himself, inviting us to step out of the dust and dirt of the paths we've been walking on and place us instead on holy ground, renewed by the saving blood of his son. You see, it's not the blood of Jesus falling upon us that we should fear or try and wash our hands of like Pilate did or foolishly spread like a curse on us and our children. No, it's only as we allow his blood to wash us clean from our rebellion that we can receive the new life that his blood has purchased. Because here's the thing the soldiers were right about. Jesus is the Son of God. And his Father in heaven is holy where we are not. They're absolutely right about that. But rather than striking us in revenge, he offers to take our terrified, shaking hands and to fill them with his truth. He offers to turn our fear into courage as we trust what he says. He invites us to take off our old shoes and take off our old life and walk anew with him and his son, whom he will resurrect to be our savior, our ruler, and our judge. Oh, what might it look like? What might it look like to come before a holy God, to receive forgiveness and walk in unison with him? I can't tell you anything more about these soldiers. We hear nothing more about them. But I can introduce you to someone who is alive today, who has learned to trust God in the uncertainty. Now, I'm going to invite the whole band to come forward ready to play our next song. But I'm going to ask Bonnie, our singer of this next song, a question. Thank you, Bonnie.
Hi, Michael. Hi, church.
Bonnie, for all that's played out for you, all that's occurred for you, why do you still trust God? In all the terror, in all the uncertainty that surrounds you, why can you still trust God?
I think it's easy to trust God in the good times. We can give him praise and we can give him thanks. But when things don't go the way that you planned them, when you work really hard for something or you really want something to happen and it hasn't happened, it can be really difficult to lean into God's love. But when he reminds you that he is holy, when you understand what happened to Jesus, you know that all those burdens are just taken off your shoulders, that you don't have to carry any of that weight, that God's plan is so much bigger than the plan that we want for ourselves. And to trust him is to accept that God is calling each of us and that we have that invitation to accept.
You've written a song that you're going to play for us here, and the band's going to play with you, a song that talks about that journey from absolute terror and fear to trust. Please, thank you.
Thank you. I wrote this song last month, going through some stuff, and it's my humble privilege to sing it to you today. This is called Take Off Your Shoes. I've been walking through deserts, wondering if you're still near. Feels like the promises have faded. All I taste is fear. But you show up in the silence when the ground is burning bright, and you ask me to be still, for the Lord, he will. You call me like Moses from the fire, from the dust. You remind me you're holy, holy, when I feel I'm not enough. You take my shaking hands and you fill them with your truth. I'm not the hero. The hero.
the story, story. I'm just walking with you. So take off your shoes. I've been fighting these battles. I was never meant to win, trying to carry the weight of who I was and all of my sin. But you break apart the waters. When I'm standing at the edge, you turn the fear into courage when I trust what you say. I'm walking with you.